My name is Ralph White, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, when Jim talked to me yesterday, he said, "I'll be the one introducing you. You got anything you want me to say?" No, I'm okay. "So you mind if I tell a couple of stories?" And I was like, I didn't know he had any stories about me. Apparently he didn't, but let's just... I wasn't specific, Jim said, "You mind if I tell a couple of stories?" Tell us a couple more, Jim. Ooh, you never know what you're getting at. Hey, thank you, Jim, for that marvelous introduction. And again, I want to thank my good friends, Dick and Barb, for having me out. I don't take that for granted. You know, that's a privilege. It's still a privilege. And it's a privilege to be up here with the people who came before. My sponsor was up and he talked about pitchers and catchers, and he talked about a room that's receptive, you know, and he talked about the energy that flows through a room. And at events like this one particularly, you know, you make it easy. And I wasn't here Thursday night to hear Mary Emma, but I know, and I'm sorry for your loss, because one of the first conferences I went to, you know, John Holmes was the banquet speaker and you were there, made an impression on me. And I think Mildred has got to be one of the most remarkable women, not in Alcoholics Anonymous. But you talk about setting a tone, and kind of scary. You know, you got to follow the lineup because Mildred set it off, you know, and doing 1, 2, and 3, and then my sponsor, who continually feeds me and continually feeds me and continually feeds. And you'll hear some of him being channeled up here today. You know, so Bobby, you know, he did what it is he does, and Hillary. Oh, my God. Hillary, I've heard sing all the time, and then we got an opportunity to do something, and I got to hear her talk one time. But Hillary was amazing filling in for her sponsor, and I really want to thank her for her message. And then, of course, our current patriarch, you know. My mom's 85 years old, and I take, you know, and there are lots of things that I don't learn well, you know, and you know you'll go somewhere and then because I've been losing a lot of people in my fellowship at home, and then I'll say, damn, I know I need to appreciate people more. I need to tell them I love them when I see them, blah, blah, blah. And then they're going, not forgetting the rest of that. But one thing I'm keenly aware of is I don't know how much longer I'll have my mom, and so I appreciate her, and I cherish the minutes, and I savor the minutes. And I was coming from somewhere, and I was at LAX, and a guy was walking, and he was walking from the back, and he had a distinctive walk. And from the back, that looks like Clancy, you know, and he was walking through the airport Sunday night, you know, because he's Clancy, and he's got the halo, and everybody in AA knows, you know. But he's walking in the airport, and he didn't have an entourage, and he didn't have a whole gang of people, and he had his own bag, and he's walking up ahead of me, and, you know, we see it, and, oh, circus, but he's going out, and he's talking, and he's working at the mission during the week, and he's keeping the doors open. And it's men and women that's coming through there getting sober. And he started a group, and that group is people getting sober. And he's just a guy, and he's walking. And I looked at him from the back, and I caught up with him. He was coming from Seattle. I was coming from somewhere. And it reminded me, just like with my sponsor, too, I don't know how much longer we'll have the opportunity, and I'm so glad that I came at the time that I came, and I'm so I am absolutely still in love with the program Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a few things I believe in. I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe in this power you guys have introduced me to. And call me corny. I still believe in miracles. The good news about doing 10 and 11 is we've already gone through 1 through 9. I remember being fairly new, Alcoholics Anonymous. I had about 9 months. And I was going to meetings every day. It took me 18 months before I got a job. You know, I came into Alcoholics Anonymous October 11th of 1986. I was 33 years old. I was at the end of a real bad run. I'm a guy who had had some things, and if you're an alcoholic of my variety, that means you had some things to lose, and I lost them all. I'm one of six kids. My father was an alcoholic, and, you know, I grew up pretty much without a dad in my family. My mom put him out when I was about 8 or 9, and she raised six boys by herself and come from the heart of Watts. I'm from South Central Los Angeles, and my mother was on welfare in the 60s. And she raised these six boys, and she marched us up the street to church every Sunday morning, and she did what it is that she does. And my mom was, she's a remarkable lady, and she didn't settle for her lot in life. And she had these six boys, and she was on welfare, and she didn't, and I remember seeing my mom, because she, you know, she'd do jobs, she'd work. And then she'd do other jobs, and I was taking her to the doctor the other day, and we were driving and we were talking, and I put some flesh on what I know my mom's story is. I tell it a lot of the times, but I don't really internalize it. And my mom was talking about how she would catch the bus to go to these jobs to clean these people's houses for her, so she could do better for her boys. And we lived, like I said, in the heart of Watts at that time, and there wasn't a lot of buses. She would catch 3 or 4 buses to go way out in the valley, and that's about an hour away. And she'd get up dark 30 in the morning. And I just thought about putting a picture, because I ain't trying to do that. I got 2 kids. I'm not catching four, but no, you know. But this lady was doing that. And then she put herself through high school. She graduated from college the same year as my younger brother, Ron. Then she worked in a company for 25 years, got the watch, got the whole thing. Mom's a remarkable lady, absolutely remarkable lady, you know. But at the time when I was growing up, I didn't always see that. But my story is a little different. I listen to people share their stories. And even though I come from not having a lot, I had everything. People call it dysfunction. Yeah, I didn't have a dad at the house. I barely noticed it. I knew it. I knew at father son's banquets, my father wasn't there. I felt different. I always was embarrassed about that. But my mom made up for being mom and dad. We didn't have money, but we had a lot of love. We didn't have material stuff, but my mom instilled in her boys, you can do anything and be anything you want to be. If you and my brother Ron talk about and share his story, and Ron goes out and talks a lot too. He's a year younger than me, and he's 3 months older than me in recovery. And we came from the same house. We slept in the same bunk beds, his feet to my face, vice versa. And we came out of that experience with entirely different perspectives. When you hear Ronnie share his story, he wanted to be somebody else, doing something else, being somewhere else. I, on the other hand, couldn't imagine being anybody other than me. I couldn't imagine being anybody other than a young brother growing up in Watts in the 60s. It was a changing time. It was a turbulent time. It was a time where there was a possibility, and I was a guy who was going to be somebody. I've always felt that, and I've always had that kind of drive, and I've always had that kind of ambition. Now, running parallel with that, though, is always, and I've always been encouraged. And I've always achieved, and I've been a high achiever, and I've done stuff and accomplished stuff. And running parallel with that, Mildred and I were talking this morning, running parallel with that inside of me has always been this idea that if you really knew me, you wouldn't like me. Running parallel with that idea, so I got this this inferior attitude that I mask with a superior air, right? Nobody else got that dual thing going on, but I got it. You know, I can feel better than you and less than you at the same time. You know, same time. You know, it's cats that I'd be like, you can't even hold a candle to me. You can't hold a conversation with me, but ooh, you can whip my ass. And so there's something, you know, I'm less than and I'm better than, same time, right? Not that dual thing working. So anyway, when I get introduced to alcohol, Clancy talked about it so well. You know, alcohol, for alcoholics, it's not so much that alcohol is my problem, that's my solution. And when I found that solution at 16 years old, and I was late, I'm a late bloomer in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't start drinking alcoholically at 16 because, ooh, I'm not going to be my daddy. You know, and I'm a square, and I'm a shy guy, and I'm a schoolboy. And so I started drinking a little bit. My drinking didn't take off till I went to college, you know, and that's when it took off. I'm a, you know, from the 60s and the 70s. I went to college in 71, and, you know, it took off, you know, and I started doing some things, and I started achieving some things, and I started having some things, got married, you know, by 19. My sponsor always talks about life is lived forwards and understood backwards, and it's the same with this disease. You can't see what it's doing to you when you're in it. So most of the time, for most of us, we don't know about crossing them. You know, Bill describes the invisible line. He calls it the region from which there's no return through human aid. And the cold thing about it is, it's no sign that says, stop, you're getting ready to enter the region from which there's no return through, you know, it's not like that. You don't get to see the warning flash. No. In fact, by the time you cross the line, you way over here like, who put that line right there? You know, you, the hell? Yesterday I was partying, and today I'm like, man, what? When did that happen? You know, and it's like, that's, but it happened. And it happened to me, and I look back, and I'm in the region. I'm in, and I'm there a long time, right? And things started happening, and I started doing things, and I started losing things, and I got married, and I had a kid, you know, I had a 2-year-old daughter, and I'm going in her piggy bank, and people are coming to the house with guns, and the whole nine. And on October the 11th, of 1986, I got miserable, and I got tired enough, and God directed me to my fourth program of recovery. You know, and I started on this journey. One of my gifts, if I have any gift, and sometimes when you're gifted with something, you take it for granted and think other and don't have patience with other folk. And what I mean by that is I work with people and I sponsor people. And sometimes I'm like, man, why is it so hard for you to get your ass to a meeting? Why can't, what is so hard about that? And one of my gifts is, I fell in love with meetings from the beginning. So I don't have an understanding that not everybody's built like that. I heard the music from the time. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to stay, one of my gifts, and it's not a virtue on my part, it's just the way it is. I love coming. You guys are my people. You know, I love going places where they say shit and God in the same sentence. You know, I like that. You know. Yeah. I'm not one of these thou guys, you know. I'm not one of these. I'm not here. I'm not this morning speaker because I'm virtuous and I'm, you know, I came in here out of desperation. I'm not one. When for, matter of fact, for a guy like me, when want to meets ought to always wins. I'm not an ought to guy, you know. But that idea of thee and thou and I was raised in church. So that, but I was, you know, under the lash of alcohol. You know, so I really embraced, you know, I did what it is that we do. I had my first step experience like it is all of us do. You know, I had it when I was out there and I came in here and I was able to give it a name. People talked about the reason why you spent a whole paycheck wasn't because you changed your mind in the middle of the night. I said I was going home at 8. I changed my mind. I'm not going home. No. It was something that was a compulsion that was bigger than you. You set off something inside of you when you took the first one that now you have lost control over it. You know, it's like my friend says, when you start drinking, it's like dancing, it's like having sex with a gorilla. You ain't through till the gorilla's through. It ain't no. You don't get to choose. I think we'll start, you know, and the way I do it, by the end, the way I do it, it's like having sex with a gorilla on Viagra. The gorilla don't never stop. Be like, damn, gorilla smoke a cigarette or something. You know, no. He just tossing and throwing and, you know. So the gorilla had its way with me. And it did what it is. I mean, it had its way with me, you know. And And the cold thing about that is not just the physical part, but when I said I'm not going to do it again, when we talk about the insanity in step two, it's not the crazy stuff you did. It's not jumping out of car, jumping out of window. The insanity in the second step is stone sober. When I said I'm not putting in it, I put it in me and started up again anyway. Stone sober. There's this compulsion. There's this idea. There's something bigger than me that I have found in this alcohol. Bill said the sensation is so elusive. I can't get that anywhere else. It calls me and it talks to me and it seduces me and it doesn't talk in its own voice. And I can't get it anywhere else. You know, and so I keep going back to it, keep going back to it till it had its way with me. You know, I love what Mildred talked about and my sponsor talked about being surrendered. You know, I was surrendered under the lash of alcohol and came to you guys in that second step, which is my favorite step in this deal, that coming to believe process. And the reason why I'm talking about that is because the second step is consummated in the tenth step. You know, and when we get in that tenth step, which I'm going to talk about, it's going to talk about for by now sanity is returned. So in that second step, that coming to believe, you know, that one was a hard one for me. You know, and the reason I'm talking about all of them is I want to talk about what it is that we do. You know, we've come in here this weekend and you've had people to come up and to talk. And the reason these people have been some of the best communicators we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, don't get confused about that. The fact that you've invited see people who are some of the best communicators in Alcoholics Anonymous don't mean that they are some of the better members of Alcoholics Anonymous. There are no better members. We don't have classes in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're up here talking about recovery. This is a living program. It's within the grasp. It's within the reach of everybody sitting in here right now. So the fact that we talk about it and some people can present a little better don't mean that they are better AAs. We got one gray, sober. So what we really do is we come in and you task us with something over the course of the weekend. And you task us with something that's pretty impossible to do, as a matter of fact. You ask us to come in and talk about something for which it's no words. But that's what we have. That's what we're limited by. Bob was talking and he says, well, we are storytellers. We're an oral society. So we talk with words because that's what we're equipped with. You know, but my friend Strange at home, he always talks about you can't describe the taste of a banana. So what you've asked us to do is to come up here and describe the taste of the spiritual experience. And that's something for which is no words. You got to have your own. It's an experience. So the best we do when we get up here in our own way and talk about this process that's been so restorative for us, we try to make it so appealing and so attractive that you'll want to get your own banana. Because on this walk, this spiritual path, Mildred was talking, it was just, I was like, oh my God, you know. But you can't give voice, and I guess I'm going to be skipping. I don't do prep. I was telling my friend Jess, because my sponsor was prepping, and I was like, damn, sometimes I still even... all these years later, it's still some pieces of me to want to be somebody else. I'm not prepped. I don't know what I'm going to talk about, and I don't know. We will see. You know, I'll find out when you find out, right? Right now. I'll find out when you find out. But you can't describe. I got a 20-year-old daughter. I got a 32-year-old daughter. I was about to say four. 32 and a 20. And my 20-year-old is a junior at Boston University. And last year she moved into her first house in Boston with two roommates, right? And so the roommates' parents were there moving them in. I flew out to Boston and I'm helping my daughter move in. And we're moving stuff. and I have to take a time out. And people in here, there's a lot of folk in here that understand when grace comes calling, and you'll know it by name. And I had to take a time out. We were moving stuff up. I had to go in the bathroom, and tears just started coming because it just overwhelmed me sometimes when you're in the presence. Just ordinary stuff. But it's extraordinary for people like me and you. Ordinary stuff. And it came to me. This is what dads do. This is what dads do. They move their little girl into their first place. But I never thought there was a time in 1985 before I found you. I thought I had forfeited it. And those are the moments that I can tell you this is what dads do. And that tells you the verbal part, but it doesn't tell you what I got. And we want you to have your own aha moment. We want you to have your moments. We want you to have your moments in grace. And it's available to everybody. So I did that second step, you know, and I'm like, I didn't get it in the second step. Came to believe, and I was one that was raised in church, you know, overdosed on church, you know. My mom took us to Sunday school, church. We ate dinner at church. We had evening service. I said, when I turn 16, you'll never have to worry about Ralph White darkening the doors of anybody else's church. Said it, did it, meant it. I'm coming up in the 60s. I said, religion is the opiate of the people. I'd rather smoke mine. Thank you very much, you know. Just saying cute little stuff like that. But I meant it. And I thought this, it wasn't so much that I thought God was this punishing. He was a mythological figure to me. Daniel and the lion's den, parting the Red Sea. Those were interesting stories, but I couldn't wrap my head around none of that. It just seemed like a mythological figure. And then in the churches I went to, these Southern Baptist churches in Los Angeles, and old folk, my grandparents and the rest of them, they up in there, and I'd be like, yeah, y'all need a preacher to tell you how to live. You ain't slick as me, you ain't cool as me, you ain't young as me. You come from the South, you uneducated. Yeah, you miss me with that, but you guys, yeah, grandma and granddad, gotta make a way. Yeah, I know, you know. And I love that chapter, We Agnostics, because in that chapter it talked about, be quick to see where religious people are right. You know, and I always said, LO63992, it's some old folk in here that's old enough to remember when phone numbers had letter prefixes. LO63992, and that was my grandparents' phone number, whole life. I still know it. I can't tell you all the phone numbers I've had in my life, but I still know my grandparents' phone number, and I still know their address. Be quick to see where religious people have been exhibiting a degree of stability and usefulness and happiness you might have saw for yourself. You know, and I was thinking to myself, because I used to say, Granddad, you ain't made in your whole life as much money as I'm making. And I'd be thought, but it dawned on me, Granddaddy never asked me for bail money. I'm like, damn, you know, so okay, let's rethink this whole thing, you know, and so I gave it a shot, and not that I got there, you know, I was one when they said to be doomed to die an alcoholic death or to live life on spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives. That was me. I'm looking for door number three. You know, that ain't, why ain't that easy alternative? Live life or you live life, you, alcoholic death. Live life, because they slipped that other piece in there on a spiritual basis, and they look the same to me. When alternatives are not easy to face, it's for two reasons. One, because they don't look like they're different alternatives. They look the same, or they look equally distasteful. When I was a kid and you were sick, you could have castor oil or cod liver oil. Really? That's my choices? Gas chamber electric chair. And that's what spiritual life and alcoholic death look like to me. Gas chamber electric chair, you know. And the reason is because I thought I knew what spiritual life looked like, and I didn't. And I didn't. The medicine that you guys prescribed for what ailed me looked like it didn't taste good. Looked like it didn't taste good. And check this out. Since when are you supposed to be taking medicine for taste anyway? But this spiritual life you guys were talking about didn't look like it would be for a guy like me. Number one, it didn't look like I wanted it. Can't do nothing I like doing. No cussing, no chasing, no none of the what I, everything I like doing go against spiritual life, I thought, because I was prejudiced. So it looked like I don't want it. And here's the other piece. Plus, I can't do it anyway. I can't live up to it anyway. So I don't want it and can't do it. So what would make a guy like me change? The negative second step. I come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as I have been. I come to believe I was going to be walking the streets at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning every Friday night, every Saturday night. That's what it got for me. I'm a graduate of a major university, and I used to work in management in the law department, major utility company. In the end, I was walking the streets at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. Didn't know where my little girl was enrolled in school and didn't know where my family was living. I was sleeping in the back of my mother's garage and I was eating lemons off a neighbor's lemon tree for breakfast. Had come to believe it was like that and it was going to be like that. So I said, okay, I'm going to give it a shot because I'm not stupid. You know, I love that chapter reading because it talks about why it makes more sense to believe than not. I'm a practical guy. I'm a logical. Don't just tell me, oh, you need to, you ought to, there's another. No, no, no. It makes more sense to believe than not to believe. And it piled on the evidence, because I'm not stupid. You might not know it from the way I was, but I'm not stupid. You know, and you would sit up and say, I look just like you. I came to believe in this power. Look at me now. You'd say the same thing. 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 You'd say the same. I ain't stupid. That many people? And it's just my lone voice saying, oh, it ain't no problem. Maybe I'll get us a shot. You know, and so I did that reluctantly. And okay, since I'm a come to believe in that decision, got on my knees with a group of men and women. 1987. You know, this three legacy program that we have. Like I said, I fell in love with meetings early on. You know, the unity of our program. And I go to meetings and I go to meetings and I go to meetings. And when you go to meetings in Southern California, don't know about other places, all I hear about is the steps in the book. That's all I hear about. Steps, book, steps, book. I'm a guide, and when I get involved in something, I get all the way in it. I get all the way in it. I collected baseball cards, football. I could tell you statistics. I know when Mari Wills stole 104 bases. I can tell you when Tommy Davis hit 353. You know, I'm a student of my craft. I subscribe to High Times. What I get into, I get into, right? So I'm going to these meetings, and I'm going to these meetings, and it made sense to me. Why be in a 12-step program and not know about the 12 steps? So I was at a meeting one day, at a marathon meeting, and some people came and presented the big book. This group came, and they were presenting the steps in a way I had never seen before. And it interested me. And after that meeting, I asked a couple of those members, would they do the same thing for some me and some friends of mine, me and my brother, another friend. And we asked my mom, could we open up the house on Sunday? I was living at my mom's house, me and my brother, in our first 18 months of sobriety. And I asked, could we open up the house on Sunday mornings and have some people come over? And on a Sunday morning in November of 1987, we had about 12 people around my mother's dining room table. And we went through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, page by page, line by line, and we only went through the first 7 chapters, which contains our 12 steps. And we went through it, and it took us about a year, and we liked it. And we do what we do when we like something. We do it again. And some people had heard about it. They said, we want to get out like that. And so we said, okay, come on. And so some more people came. And we went through the experience, and we did it again. And we've been doing it consistently since 1987 on Sunday mornings. This morning, there'll be about 200 members sitting around. Now we're in a facility in Gardena, California. And the Never Too Early Big Book Workshop has been meeting consistently. And we didn't know that's what we were doing at the time. And that first year, when we were together as a group, we got on our knees as a group when we got to that third step. And I said, okay, God, whatever, however, deity. You know, Mildred doesn't like that word. And that's because Mildred was a professional prayer. She comes from a convent, so Mildred's a pro at this. So she can, you know, come up with her own word and the rest. I'm a heathen, so I like when they just give me the words, you know. Give me the words. And I like, you know, they say the word is optional. But for a guy like me that's not a professional, I'll be like, okay, God, I'm giving myself, here I am, I'm turning myself in. Didn't know. And the thing about the third step is you doing this turn in process before you know the power. You ain't got in touch with him yet. I'm offering myself just like I am. Every church, you know, when I was going to church, they say, if you're going to get down with this denomination, whatever it is, what you say when you come to us is this. I'm agreeing that I'm going to accept what it is that you're saying. I'm also agreeing that I'm going to get down like you guys do, and I'm already going to be right. I'm already coming right. I'm going to stop doing what it is I do. I don't want to be that way no more. And okay, I'm going to get down with you guys. That's what I heard. That's what I heard. When you go to church, you got to get right to go there. And what I liked about taking that third step, you didn't have to already be right. You didn't already have to come right. You could just come right as you are. I was not a vision for you that first time I took that third step prayer. If I'd have got with any lady in here and said, baby, I offer myself to you, you'd have been like, dude, keep it moving. You know. But I got on my knees with that group of people. I got on my knees with that group of people. And something amazing happened. He took me just like that. Just like that. You don't already have to be defectless. We don't even get to talking about that for about three or four more steps. Just like that. Still lying, still tricking, still cheating, still gambling, still everything. I'm coming just like this. Do something with your boy. And he don't need my permission to change me, but he does need my cooperation. And I started the cooperating process, you know, in the next steps. You know, that fourth and fifth step is clearing the channel because I'm blocked. I'm like, I think it was Mildred that talked. I don't believe that, you know, when Mildred talked, you know, she was talking to me. She talked about grace not being an unmerited favor. I think grace is just grace. I just think grace is just grace. It flows. The receiver is blocked. The receiver is blocked. The sender just sends. God just do what he do. God don't do but one. God just keeps guiding. That's what he does. He just keeps sending grace. You know, he just keeps on doing what he do. We, on the other hand, have some other stuff to go on, and we be thinking, and I'll ascribe human characteristics to God. Even now I am, because I'm sitting here telling you what God, I don't know what God does. You know, but I'm just talking about what I think this power does. And inside that construct, I'm telling you, and I have no clue. I have no idea. The more I walk on this spiritual path, the more convinced I am that that's not my job to know. If God is small enough for me to understand, he ain't big enough for me to trust, no way. Don't worry about understanding God. You know, that ain't the deal. I'm not trying to come in here and understand that. You know, I'm trying to get in relationship with. You know, I'm trying to get reliance on, and that's what I'm, and that's the whole deal. You know, when you do, the third step promises have something that's crazy in there to me. One of the third step promises says, you know, the God says, you know, he says, which is the one, he says, let me get it, because I don't want to misquote. I wasn't quoting nothing this morning, but that just jumped in my head, the third step promises. Established on such a footing, we began. No. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. The wording right there is really crazy because in the third step, you're talking about stop playing God. So it says if you established on such, if you performed his work well, and I'd be like, yeah, I'm doing God's work. You know, that's my thing, and I got to be real careful. You know the difference between me and God? Because I don't know the difference all the time. But you know the difference between you know the difference between me and God? God ain't never woke up and thought he was me. You know that is the difference. So now I get on this I launch on this vigorous course of action because now I'm going to unblock the channel. Because grace is flowing, but I'm not getting it, right? Because I'm blocked. I'm blocked by calamity. I'm blocked by worship of other things. Her, money, chasing, cars, stuff, house, all this stuff blocks me, you know. So now I'm getting unblocked. I'm getting unblocked. I'm getting unblocked. I do the resentment inventory. I do the sex inventory. I do the fear inventory that we talked about, that Bob talked about. And so now I get unblocked and I get to 6 and 7. And I love that deal right there, okay. And I love that 7-step prayer because I don't specifically try to say what defects, God, take them from me. And you know, the reason for that, when my early attempts to do a 7-step and a 6-step, I used to say, God won't remove something without replacing it with Joe. So I gotta practice the opposite. I gotta practice, and that's behavior modification, you know, practicing the opposite. And that ain't the deal at all. That ain't the deal at all. When it talks about defects of character. You know, when we say that word defective, what do you think about? What in the marketplace? You know, what happens if you have a defective car? If there's a defect in a car, sometimes they have a what? To where? Back to the manufacturer. Because the car don't work on itself. With my human defects, back to the manufacturer, because the car don't work on itself. So all that time you cars have spent trying to fix yourselves, you know, I don't care if you got a computer chip in it or what, car don't work on itself. Recall to the manufacturer. Wow, that's big. And only the manufacturer really know what the defect is and how to fix it anyway. I don't care what kind of computer is in the car don't know how to fix itself. Definition of defect. So I'm defective trying to find the defect. Now, that's kind of a flip comment because that doesn't mean don't start doing this self-examination that we do so well. That doesn't mean, like Bob said, because some of it will slap you in the face. You'll meet your defects. You ain't got to go looking. You'll meet them. They get brought to me regularly. I don't always know that's what they are, though. Sometimes I think that they're my assets. You know, I can talk my way out of anything. Yeah, that's why you're in it in the first place, because you think you can talk your way out of it. That's why you got in it. So I need some help. I need some help, you know. And so I get to that. And then when we come out the other side of that, and I think one of the first places, the thing about this, the reason I'm talking about all the steps is because of what it is that we do. This is not some independent exercise where people are going to come up here and say, when I'm always interested when people say, what step are you working on? And I'll be like, I don't get it. I don't get it. Because this process that we do is not a discrete series of actions and activity. It's an integrated series of actions that become a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle. I don't sit up and be, oh, I think I'm on three. That's ingrained in me. I stand on the third. I'm under new management. I'm under new management. All that's, you know, that first step of mine. I'm an alcoholic. I look at it like I'm black and I'm going to just be that way. What? I'm an alcoholic. That ain't changing. I'm alcohol. That's what? I get up. That's keep it moving. You know, and so it's an integrated series of actions for me. And so this lifestyle, if anybody in here is new and thinking, well, I'm going to pick this one out and smorgasbord. No. Spiritual life is not a theory. So and the reason why they got numbered is just for frame of reference, just to be able to say, do this, do this, do this, do this. And so now, because what we're really doing is clearing the channel. Clearing the channel. You might not have got it. Mildred was talking about living three-dimensional and it hurts. And I need to be living fourth-dimensional. And some people, you know, sometime when I was new, you know, I heard Sandy when I was new. Didn't get it. Then I heard Sandy a couple of years later. I mean, sent me to the dimension with him. Wasn't ready. You know, there are different conversations that are going on in this room right now. So when Mildred was talking about the third dimension, and for somebody might not have been, didn't get it, she was talking to me, and what she was talking about is the world we live in all the time, a world of stuff, you know, a world of interacting with other people, a world of the bondage. The third dimension, the best way to put it, is the freedom, is the bondage of self. Okay, Ralph, what does that mean, bondage of self? You know, I'm stuck and I'm inhibited and I'm hampered by my own self. You keep running in the walls and you keep running into the same wall, bondage of self. Keep bumping in the problems with other people, bondage of self. Find out that more than one person is telling you why you always got to be right, bondage of self. Now, I don't always have to be right. More than one person telling you, you better take a look at it, bondage of self. I always got to be the one to make sure that this is like this and this is like this and this is like this, and they still don't act right. Why is everybody tripping? Bondage of self. You know, third dimension, you know. So Mildred was talking about that, and so now we're talking about trying to live somewhere else, but it ain't easy because that's where my feet are and that's where I'm grounded. You know, my sponsor likes to talk about the hard wiring, and there are some things that are hardwired in me for a long time, and I'm 62 years old, and I've come to embrace some of the things that are defects of mine. You know, what part of getting into that 6 and 7 step, part of it is embrace some of it. Because it ain't going nowhere, and you can beat yourself up and you can trip. What it'll do is get better and it'll get altered. But I think for me, I've had an unhealthy and unreasoning oversensibility to criticism all my life. I'm 62. I still react the same way as when I'm saying, I'm in business meetings. You know, I'm in a business meeting and we're talking, we're getting ready to go to try something. Somebody's talking, and then one of the guys will throw something out at the meeting and he'll say something, and the guy that's the lead, the attorney, will say, oh, that's a stupid idea. We're not going to do that, and keep moving. And then the same guy that said the stupid idea, throw another one out. Me, if you say that's a stupid idea in the meeting, whatever, I'm shut down. Done. I'm not at the meeting no more. I'm looking at him. You know, I'm better now because I've done a whole lot of inventory and a whole lot of tending, but I still go to that place. And I know I'm the only one, but I still go to that place. And I suspect I will go to that place probably till I'm gone from here. I don't go and I don't stay as long as I used to. And I embrace some of the stuff that's in me, that's a defect, because God did what it is that he does, and sometimes he'll work with your defects. He'll work with your defects. All the time he works with our defects. He's transformational. And the reason why I'm talking about this, and why all of the speakers have given a little bit of their story, even though they're doing steps. And why is that? Why would people do that? Why do people get a background? Because this is not an exchange of information that we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, that's what happens at our meetings, and that's what happens at these deals, you know. But it's not about the acquisition of information, you know. Information's fine, and I hope people leave with information this weekend. But what'll get you? What got me and what hooked me is the transformations. The transformation. Because Mildred doesn't look like her story. And when I heard her story, I'd be like, ooh, she was like. And when Hillary was sharing her story, the power of her story is the transformational nature of the power. That's the power of the story. Don't get caught up in an event like this where we're really talking about the steps and we're really talking about the book. My sponsor says it all the time. The book is not the treasure. It's the map. Those of us who are here representing to you this weekend, we don't fall in love. The book is not the treasure. It's the map. There's a power. There is a power. There's a power that I've tapped into. Because if the book was the treasure, then if I learn the book better, see, I'm a book guy. I'm a head guy. That's who I am. If I know the book better than you, I recover better than you. What? This ain't a book exercise. This is a spiritual experience. It's available to anybody. Available to everybody. So I come through that seventh and eighth. And the thing about the seventh step, and the reason why I got there is because this process is a process for a reason. One of the ways I first start addressing some of my defects of character is immediately going to 8 and 9. Procrastination. I start writing immediately. Write that list. Irresponsible. I start making the amends. I start facing people. I'm scared. I'm a runner. I'm an evader. I'm an avoider. And I start facing some of that. This process is built in to address some of what it is that it's built in. It's built in. So now I do that 8th step and that 9th step. And I come out of it, and then it says, now we have entered the world of the spirit. We've come out of the 3rd dimension. We've done some stuff. We've looked at our powerlessness. We've said, okay, I know I can't do it. I need something bigger than me. And I've decided, okay, I'm going to take a chance on this something bigger than me. And the reason I'm going to take a chance on it is because I have so much witness testimony saying that they've taken a chance on it and it's worked for them. And so now I take a chance on it and I start looking at the things that are blocking me from this spirit. And I look at them and I uncover and discover and discard some of the blockage. And I start clearing the channel, clearing the channel, clearing the channel. And I do the 7th and 8th, and I'm clearing the channel some more. I'm clearing the channel some more. If you have any leftover resentment, when you do your inventory and there are still some resentments that still seem to be lingering, there's still some stuff there that still seems like I can't get by it. Hey, that's because this is not a 5-step program. This is a 12-step program. I hear people all the time saying, damn, I keep doing inventory, but this stuff is still there. Ain't a 5-step program. 12-step program. You know, and usually the residue of the inventory find it in the 9th step. Still mad at, and probably owe him amends. Sandy used to say it, 2 things, forgive, amends. I don't want it to just be, okay, no. What about revenge? That ain't what, no. Listen to me again, Ralph. Forgive, amends. Ooh. Damn, can it be enough? Forgive, amends. That don't have to be the only two. It don't have to be the only two. You can keep on tripping. You can keep on hating. You can keep on doing that. Keep on resenting people. Having a resentment, though, you know, the person is like putting them in jail, but you got to stand guard. So you up in there with them. You don't have to do what Sandy suggests, amends or forgive. You can keep living. How's that working for you? As a sponsor, I'll never trip off people. How's that working for you? Doing it the other way, how's that working? Man, I'm not going to forget. Okay, that's cool. How's that working for you? Okay, do you want to be right or do you want to be free? And what this program has to offer is freedom, but it's at a cost. Bill says the cost is it meant the destruction of self-centeredness. I'm not the center of the universe. Everything don't revolve around me. Everything ain't from my point. Isn't that a trip? How everything, there's always another perspective. You could be mad, especially if you got a mate and you at the meeting, you'd be like, okay, you frame your argument. You know how wrong they were. You're going to put it down just like this, and they are going to be properly contrite because they're going to see the truth of it because you frame the argument just right. And you go and you say it, and then they say something like, they come with what, and you be like, wait a minute, that's what I was just getting ready to say about you. How you going to talk about I always got to be right? That's what I'm coming here to tell you. You always got, next thing you know. It amazes me how there's always another perspective. Always another point of view, you know. And so this process, you know, if you're interested, check this out. You ain't got to listen to anything any of the speakers said this weekend. If your life run on your will is successful, have at it. Keep running it. Keep running it. But if you're interested and if you're looking for another experience, you can settle for relief or you can go for freedom. You can settle for relief or you can go for the full package. What this program has to offer is freedom. Freedom from bondage to self, freedom to be, to do and to be all you can be, and you don't even know what that is. So in the 10th step, it says, so now we've entered the realm of the spirit. So now I've unblocked all this other stuff that keeps me living in the third dimension, which is in collision with you all the time. I'm always in collision with other folk. Entered the realm of the spirit. Then it says our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Now, I love Bob. This is the first time I heard Bob say it. The first, you know, how he broke it down is, you know, the give up, clean up, you know, give up, clean up, and then it says grow up. A lot of times people call 10, 11, 12 maintenance steps, but it says right there our next step is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And the reason people call it maintenance steps is because later on in the 10th step it talks about the maintenance of our spiritual condition. But when you maintain, if you're maintaining a car, you're trying to keep it in its current state, in its current condition, it's an inanimate object. But what if you're maintaining a plant? What if you're maintaining a plant? What do you do with it? You water it. You give it whatever so that it can keep doing what? Growing. Growing. Living objects are doing two things. They're either growing or dying. There's nothing staying static in the living world. The maintenance deal that we talk about here, what these steps really are growth. A growth step. Because later on it talks about it's easy to let up on the spiritual program action, but we headed for trouble. And in the 10th step, one of the things that starts happening, I've done this. You know, I've done inventory. I've done amends. I've cleaned stuff up. And something automatically starts up. This 12-step process, what it's really designed to be is a ego-reducing exercise. It's an ego-reducer because the job of my ego is to separate me from God, separate me from you. And this ego-reducer is what I'm left with. See, this deal, we've talked about it all weekend. The spiritual life and spiritual growth is not measured the same as material growth. Material growth is measured by bank account. It's always measured by more. Bigger house, that's material growth. More rooms in my house. Bigger car, better car, more money in my bank account. Physical growth is even measured that way. Taller, bigger, muscular, all that is measured. But spiritual growth, unlike any other, is measured by subtraction, by ridding myself of. Spiritual, it's a whole different ball game. It's a different way of looking at things. And so this whole ego-reducing exercise, two things. Grow God, shrink Ralph. That's the whole deal. Grow God, shrink Ralph. Grow God, shrink Ralph. That's how you do it. Don't worry about the rest of it. Grow God, shrink Ralph. That's the whole deal. People be looking and searching. This week, I've heard some stuff that I'm going to take with me. I had never heard it talking, I had never heard it till Mildred said it, the ox that you ride on is the one that you're looking for, And I'm like, that's it. Grow God, shrink Ralph. If you shrink you, you'll be left with him. Don't worry about doing a whole bunch of the other. That's soul searching and that seeking inside, that's the deal. But what happens? So now I've done that. I've done the ego-reducing stuff that is involved in 1 through 9. I've done that. But what happens for a guy like Ralph? Bob Darrell talks about it all the time. The ego thing, ego reduction is kind of like flushing the toilet in the back. Then you can flush it, and the water is all gone, but what starts happening? What happens? Ego, same way. Flush it. So what I got to do? Keep flushing. Step 10. Down. It's all the way down. I'm cool. Done all my amends. Wrote my inventory. I'm cool in the gang. I've looked at all this stuff. I am cool. And then if you cool, like me, that's what starts happening. I'm taking people through the work. I'm sponsoring. I know this thing. They got me coming out and talking. Now I'm at work, I'm feeling good because you come in, and the Bible talks about attending to the consequences at first. And that's why it's so easy to go at this thing so hard, to go at it so hard, because I'm coming from a desperate place. I'm coming from a place of survival. I'm coming from a tore-up place. I'm coming from a place that every time you get something, it's newsworthy. It's big. Ooh, I got a driver's license. Ooh! Clapping at me. I opened a checking account. And people will say, why do people get pats on the back for doing what they want to do and what they ought to do? That's why we come to Alcoholics Anonymous, because you don't get them outside, but we do. So what? They ain't deserved. So what? We do. And when you come from the mangled place, you need it. You need it. Some people then, when they further down the road, want to discount that. Don't pat people on the back for doing it. They need it. When you come from wrestling, when you come from dancing with the gorilla, you need it. But then, by the time you're through with step nine, by the time you're at step nine, oh, I done got some stuff back. And that ass whooping recedes. When my behind is raw, my ears open and my mouth closes. When my behind starts healing, my mouth starts running and my ears start closing. And that's the dynamic that starts taking place. And, you know, and I'm not as desperate. I'm not as all in. I start pulling chips out. I'm an all in guy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been all in since October 11, 19. Stay all in. Stay all in. People here usually are the all in people anyway. We had some people that stood up last night and came and got the book. Probably haven't been all in. Like Clancy said, the ones who are here at this event are usually not brand new, or returners. I call them used newcomers. You know, I was a used newcomer. I was a used newcomer. Don't trip. You know, but you know, and if you're in here and if you're in that number, quit doing the AA hokey pokey. Put your left foot in and take your left foot out and put your right foot. No, get in. All in. You know, I was in Vegas. You might go to Vegas sometime and you sitting at the table. Blackjack is what I play if I'm playing. And I don't even sit there no more. It's just, I get bored. But anyway, I could remember sitting at the table and a guy will pass by and he might just walk by and stop and put all his chips in. And you'll be like, damn. You know, because you only got some chip, but you ain't putting them all in because what? You might lose. And people do that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not putting all my chips in. And that's a cold dynamic if you're a guy like me. Because I'm playing with house money. I didn't have any chips. All the chips I have, you gave me. House, you gave me. Wife, you gave me. Job, you gave me. Kids, you gave me. Father, you gave me. Ability to be a father, you gave me. Dignity, you gave me. Respect, you didn't get a job. Oh, I got to be at that. Can't go to those meetings. Oh, you know, I got to be at these. Like, oh, I got pulling chips. I'm playing with house money. I'm all in. Because what I've learned by being all in, you grow my chips. Doesn't matter. Sometimes they come off the table. So what? That's because I'm measuring what I think I need to be okay anyway. So I do this ego-reducing thing, and now I've entered the world of the Spirit. And they knows me, because now I'm not rendered perfect. Some people say, well, if you just do one inventory. No, no, no. It says, first thing it say, when you enter the world of the Spirit, Ralph, this is how you keep flushing. Watch. Oops. First word, because now that you are unblocked, you can see yourself clearly. Watch for selfishness. Oh, we're going back to a four-step again. That sounds awfully familiar. I've done that before. Yeah, and you're still prone to it. You're not above it. It didn't go anywhere. You just now have a way to address it. Watch for selfishness, resentment, dishonesty, and fear. When these crop up, not if, when. You mean I did all this? And yeah, you're not going to rise above the level of human. They're going to piss you off. They're going to say some stuff. You're going to have to use the bathroom when Clancy's talking. You're going to walk and he's going to call you out on it. You're going to get pissed off at him, but you can't say nothing to him. He's going to, so Yeah, you're still going to get mad. Sponsor's going to tell you something to do. You're going to do, train your feet. You know, somebody else was talking about that. So, yeah, watch. But more than just in here, be at work. Watch for it. When these crop up, ask. So first I'm watching. Ask. Sometimes that's a prayer. Okay, God, take it. Right now. On the spot. On the spot. Now I'm capable of doing inventory on the spot. Because I know it's me. It ain't never you. How come it's never you? Because if it's you, you own me. The most freeing sentence in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is our problems, we think, are basically of our own making. If the problem is in me, the solution is in me. If I got to wait for you to get better, for me to get better, I'm in big trouble. So it's always me. I always make it me. You are not going to own me. My ego's still alive a little bit like that, and I still say, no. It's always me. Watch. Ask. Discuss it with somebody immediately. Make amends right then if you harmed. Oh, man, you know what? And that's a hard one. Can I talk to you in the office, man? You know, I was out of line. What you asked me to do was not unreasonable, but my response to you was, and I apologize. That's not going to happen with me again. Then turn my thoughts resolutely to somebody I could. That's always the solution in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's always default position. No matter what it is, keep that. That's always the position for any and everything. Sex problems, we look for somebody we could help. Turn your resolutely to somebody we could help. If the alcoholic fails to enlarge and perfect his spiritual life through self-sacrifice and working with others, he won't be able to survive the certain trials. Anybody in here have any trials and low spots in their recovery? They're coming. And the antidote, all the time, turn your thoughts to how you can help others. Powerful promises in the 10th step. That's where the miracle really is. I hear people talk about I'm involved in spiritual warfare and the rest of that. That's not really what it is that we talk about when we enter the realm of the spirit. I'm not fighting anybody. Done. Fight's over. Fight's not mine. Done deal. Love and tolerance of others is our code. What? Even the bleeding deacon. Even the guy that jumps up and holds the podium hostage. Even the guy that does that. Like Clancy said, he ain't even the one that ain't even really alcohol. Even the one that ain't really alcohol. Love and tolerance of others is our code. By now we've ceased fighting even alcohol. And then in that promise, in the 10th step promise, it says, we've ceased fighting liquor. The problem don't even exist for us. And then it says something really crazy. It just happened. That is the miracle of it. The miracle is not that we not drink. That I'm not drinking. The miracle is I ain't even wanting to. Where'd that come from? When did that happen? For years in recovery, I'd say, if I could drink with no consequences, I'd be drinking. And that was a true statement for me. So don't try to be where you're not yet. Be where you are. Because if you think you're somewhere where you're not, you'll be in dangerous territory, doing dangerous things. thinking, oh, I can do what Bob Bazance does with 48, and I'm 48 days. No, 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 no. But looking back, I remember talking one day. I think I was at my workshop, and I remember talking, and it dawned on me. I don't know how long it had been in me. You know what I'm saying? When you get the ahas, you don't know how long it's been there before it pops to the forefront. But I was like, if I could get loaded right now, I wouldn't. Wow. Book says we recoil from it as from a hot flame. My experience. See, I'm not a guy that says the book says this, so that makes me that. I don't believe it's true because it's in the book. I believe it's in the book because it's true. This big, I believe people experience some stuff, then put it in here. Don't do it the other way. You know, because if my mom reads this book and reads the doctor's opinion and it says, you know, that men and women like drink consensually for the fact, she wouldn't have that experience. My mom doesn't fit her. It fits Ralph White. And that is the miracle of it. That's a trip. That's the miracle. For people that's really doing the damn thing, ain't nobody in here white knuckling it. It's not about I got to get up and be on guard every day. I'll hear, you know, some of these athletes have these problems, and, you know, CeCe Sabathia went in, and I heard some people on TV, and they were talking, oh, he's going to be fighting this thing the rest of his life. It's going to be an everyday struggle. And I was like, really ain't knowing. I don't wake up it's been a long time since I woke up and thought about, now I've dreamed about drinking. I've had thoughts about, for me, see, we're going everywhere now. For me, when I have one of them drinking dreams, I just thank God. Because I never yet woke up and regretted the fact it was a dream. I've never yet. Matter of fact, for me, sometimes I've had them so deep in the dream, I'll say, this ain't a dream. And I've had them before, so then in the dream, I'll say, plus, you know, you've been faking and fooling them all this time. And so now I'm all confused when I wake up. I'm like, ooh, have I been, you know, and it take me a couple of minutes, right? What is he talking about? I'm up here. We talking. You know, so so then I wake up and I'll be like, what? And it takes me a minute. Because then I'm sad, like, damn, you've been sitting up here perpetrating all this time. And then I'll think, wait a minute. You saw, and it is no feeling like the relief of still being so, oh my God. And I was like, then I said, thank you, God. I got a freebie. I felt what it feels like to relapse without relapsing. And it solidifies my commitment to this thing. It solidifies my commitment to this thing, you know. So then it talks about now we got to have more work, more work, more work, more work. Because now I've entered the realm of the spirit. And when we talk about step 11, we talk about, and it's all through prayer and meditation. So we usually talk about the means, the vehicle. How? Through prayer and meditation. But what are we seeking through prayer and meditation? To improve our conscious contact with this power. Now it talks about the sense of power flowing through, clear channel. Sponsor always says, I'm the pipe, I'm not the well. I'm the pipe, I'm not the well. As the pipe, I need to have a clear channel. I need to have a clear channel for me to be talking and to be a vessel for his kids. I need to have a clear, because now I'm woke. Now I'm awake. Step 12 is going to talk about having had this spiritual. I'm awake. I'm wide awake. And I'm awake to the possibility, and I'm awake to the responsibility, and I'm awake to what it is that my role is in this world. So it talks about in step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact. So now we're talking about improving the conscious contact. People have had unconscious, now I'm consciously aware. I'm aware, and I'm walking in partnership with this power, and I'm aware, and I don't always know what that looks like, and sometimes I think I know what it looks like. And sometimes I get confused, like I told you before. And I get really confused in this. It talks about you'll start relying on this intuition. And this intuition is so, at first, it's so baffling. And a lot of people get carried away with it. It's in its own way, it can be intoxicating, entering the fourth dimension that Mildred was talking about. And so sometimes I get carried away. And I start thinking God is speaking. I get nervous when people tell me God is talking to them. That's just me. And I believe that. You know, I believe it, but sometimes when, you know, that's still a prejudice of mine I have to get used to. Because when God talks, you know, when I think I hear God's voice, you know what God's voice sounds like me? It sounds like this. It sounds like me. It sounds like me. I ought to be calling Bob. Bob, I think, good. Do you sound like God to you? No, Ralph, that's you. That is you. That is you. Because when you knew what this, you know, and you be thinking God, oh, I know God's will, and you lonely, or you horny, you know, and you look across the room, and looks like she winks at you, and you, and I, okay, I'm lonely, she's winking, must be God's will, you know. Books say we'll pay for that, and all kind of observe, you know, thing. So, get really careful being new on this thing, you know, but start after a while can start relying on that spiritual intuition. And in the 11th step, and it talks about three parts. I used to wonder, why is the nightly review first? Because coming out of step 10, see, step 10 is I'm going to look at my stuff, I'm flushing. Bam, I'm flushing. Right? Reducing that ego again, right then. So at the end of the night, a lot of people call it the 10, but at the end of the night, so now I'm going to sit back, and at the end, nightly review. That's the first piece of the step 10 stuff. So, 11 stuff. Some people say, well, why wouldn't it be in the day? But the nightly review, end of my day. Now, the 11 stuff, nightly review, looking at my day constructively. Takes a little practice sometime. Because I'm one that fits right in when it talks about don't drift into morbid reflection. No, damn, you know you should have did this. Damn, you always putting your foot in your mouth. Always saying the wrong thing. If you would have said this, they would have did that. And then, so now I'm doing the wrong thing. You know, that's not the 11th step. Review the day constructively. Look at if there's something I needed to do differently. Look if, okay, tomorrow when I go to work, I didn't make amends promptly. I'm going to go in the boss's office tomorrow. I'm going to straighten this out right then. You know, and the reason the nightly review is the first part of the 11th step is because now the second part of the 11th step is upon awakening. And so I don't want to wake up bringing last night into this morning. Clean it up. We're going to start with a clean slate this morning. So we go into the morning meditation. And people have their own different morning meditation practices. I'm a lazy guy. You know, for me, my favorite meditation is a guided meditation. I like to listen to tapes to tell you, you know, and guide you through, you know. My favorite person to talk about that, Howard Bolins, is a remarkable guy for me, you know, and I lean on it. That's an area where one of my defects can still come out. Because I listen to my sponsor talk about meditation. I'll listen to Bob. I'll listen to Howard. And I'll be like, damn, these dudes are like way over here. And do what you do. Do what you do. And it grows. And it's a growth process. But it talks about in the morning, the book gives me some valuable suggestions on what to look at. You know, think about my day. You know, I have busy days and I have long ones and I have a lot of stuff going on. So in a general way. And then I hit the road and I keep it moving, you know. And the last piece in the 11th step is throughout the day, you know. And so the part is nightly review, morning meditation, and all throughout the day. You know, all throughout the day. Okay, God, you in charge. Okay, God, you in charge. Okay, God, it's your world. Okay, God, you got me. Okay, God, I'm your boy. I talk to God like that. I'm not a thee thou person. I'm not Baptist Church talks about you can't doubt God. I doubt God all the time. God ain't tripping off that. See, there I go talking about what God is doing again. I don't know what God's doing. But to me, my concept, God ain't tripping off that. You know, sometimes they'll say, you know, God won't give you more than you can handle. And I'll be like, dude, sometimes I think you got a little too much confidence in your boy. I'm not trying to look at this, you know. And I talk just like that throughout the day. Pause when agitated. And I add something to that, you know, because it's a pause when agitated or when doubtful, you know. And so somebody piss you off, somebody do something, and she, especially if you're in relationship with somebody else, you know, she's saying something and you saying something. Not only pause, felt pause and walk. Sometimes you got to pause and walk, because in the pause, they still going. And you might not be, you might think you more fit than you are. Pause and walk. Okay. I'm pausing and I'm walking, you know. And it talks about letting God discipline us in this way, because we undisciplined people. And the guy you got in front of you is extremely undisciplined. But I got my sponsor waving, I got Lee waving, you know. It has been my privilege, it's been my pleasure, it's been my honor to share this day with the people who are here this weekend. And I really want to thank each and every one of you for coming out and giving us your energy. You know, I'm a guy that still loves this thing with everything in me. So we let God discipline us in this simple way. I'm Ralph White, I'm an alcoholic.